You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM broadcasting from Burnaby.
This is a special edition of the Green Planet Monitor, voices and stories from a warm, wet planet. Over a year has passed since October 7th. Over 42,000 Gazans killed by American bombs and missiles dropped by Israel. The number is likely considerably higher than that. Some experts say it could be as high as 180,000 dead. 16,000, over 16,000 children killed. Meanwhile, since October 8th, U.S. bombs and missiles have killed 2,300 Lebanese, and three-quarters of those, 1,400, in the last month alone. 1.2 million Lebanese people now on the run, displaced, like about 2 million in Gaza. Dimitri Lascaris, thank you for joining me from Athens, Greece, to talk about all this. You've just returned from Lebanon, and I'm interested in hearing your thoughts on how that went. But this is most terrifying. I find this astonishingly terrifying that all this is going on, these actions being committed by Israel with complete impunity. And Mads Gilbert, the Norwegian physician, I was just watching him on Al Jazeera talking about this, that all this is happening with complete impunity. Israel, I mean, we can talk about whether or not, you know, Israel's army, the IDF, is poised on the brink of strategic defeat, but they can certainly carry out what they're carrying out, at least so far, with total impunity, guaranteed by the United States. Absolutely guaranteed by the United States. The United States will not allow ceasefire to take place, will not allow, it could stop the war, but it's not going to do it. I find this terrifying, and I wonder where it's going. Where is it going? So, Dimitri Lascaris, thank you for joining me on the Green Planet Monitor. Where is all this heading?
Well, David, as long as the Americans continue to supply weapons to Israel, and as long as Israel has the military capability to use those weapons, the killing will continue. And it's going to make the losses suffered thus far seem limited by comparison. There's no question that Israel, receiving virtually unlimited quantities of the most destructive weaponry of the United States, conventional weaponry, can kill far more than the number of people we've seen massacred thus far. And I must tell you, David, you know what my position has been on Israel and Western government policy towards Israel. You're as familiar with my thoughts on that subject as anybody. And I've been complaining for years that Israel has enjoyed effective impunity, complete immunity from the consequences of its criminal acts. But even I did not believe that our governments would allow Israel to go this far. I'm astonished by that. I thought there was a red line out there somewhere. But it's, I think, now undeniable that from the perspective of Western governments, the ones that are currently in power, I mean, not some hypothetical government that might come to power in the future, there's no red line. There is no limit on what they will allow Israel to do. So it's a horrifying prospect that currently confronts the people of the region, and it's very dangerous for all of us. And, you know, you and I have had exchanges over the last few months about this subject. I think that our best hope, I wish it was not true. I wish that the governments of the West would pull the plug on this genocidal rampage. They certainly have the power to do so. But I think the best hope for the Palestinian people and the peoples of the region is the military defeat of Israel because of the attitude of Western governments. And I think that that's a real, not just a possibility, I think at this stage it's a probability. And we can discuss that if you like, but at the end of the day, I see no other way to stop the killing, given the attitude of Western governments to Israel's crimes.
And it's astonishing. The other day, Tuesday evening, Matthew Miller, a spokesperson at the U.S. Department of State, expressed on behalf of the Biden administration concerns about Israel's approach to bombing Lebanon, and particularly in Beirut. And I can't recall the term he used, like urging Israel, exhorting Israel to behave itself. And the next morning, Israel drops more bombs on the Daya in southern Beirut, killing people. Nabatieh, the town of Nabatieh in South Lebanon, was just struck this morning, killing the mayor, bombing the municipal building, actually in the midst of a civilian emergency committee meeting, killing the mayor. And this is like 12 hours after Matthew Miller expressed concern and urged Israel to tone it down.
The Lebanese prime minister, as a matter of fact, David, came out yesterday and said that U.S. officials had assured him that Israel was going to reduce its attacks on Beirut. And in fact, during the entire time I was there on my most recent trip, which lasted about 4 days, from Friday to Monday, there was not a single bomb dropped on central Beirut or Dahiya throughout that period, even though right up until the date of my arrival, Israel had savagely bombed Beirut, and particularly Dahiya, for 11 straight days. So when this statement came out from the Lebanese prime minister today, I was like, wow, maybe the Americans have finally got religion. What did they do this morning? As you mentioned, they began viciously attacking, bombing Dahiya, and they've literally laid waste to Nabatieh. I mean, I was in Nabatieh several times in the last year, and I saw, monuments to the destruction that the city sustained in prior Israeli ground incursions during the occupation of South Lebanon. I don't think the Nabatieh has experienced anything like this, even though it's seen many horrors in its wars with Israel. And this is a natural consequence, as we said from the outset, of a complete absence of any restraint being imposed upon Israel. The inevitable consequence of that impunity will be ever more lethal forms of criminality with more and more victims.
And it's targeting civilian populations. Mads Gilbert was talking about this this evening. They're intentionally targeting civilian population in Gaza, and now they're reproducing that in Lebanon. And they actually have a doctrine for this, which is called the Daya Doctrine, after the neighborhood in South Beirut. Can you talk about this doctrine? What is it?
It is essentially the theory that the best way to win the war, a war with minimal cost to your own military, is to cause so much pain to the civilian population that either the military leadership of the country in which they live throws in the towel, or they rise up against the leadership and replace it with one that will do Israel's bidding. And the problem with this doctrine, quite apart from the fact that it causes incalculable suffering, is that it never works. They've applied that doctrine repeatedly to Lebanon, from which it takes its name, the southern suburb of Beirut. They've applied that doctrine to the Palestinian people. They've applied that doctrine in Syria, and yet they're still fighting. They're still resisting. The people are not in any of these countries. Look at Yemen. Look what Yemen endured. Since 2015, there was essentially a genocide being perpetrated by the Saudis with U.S. weaponry and British weaponry over a period of years. They're still fighting. The country is in a terrible state. They're taking, a licking yet again, directly this time, not through the Saudis, but through the Americans and the British. They're still fighting. The Dahiya Doctrine, as a practical matter, is a failure, and it is a criminal doctrine.
And what is the doctrine?
It's just kill as many civilians as possible. It subject the ones who survive to as much suffering as possible. Make the country as unlivable as possible until they submit or force their leaders to submit. It's as simple as that. It's not rocket science. And the author of this doctrine, by the way, is a gentleman, and I use that term loosely, by the name of Eisenkot.
Gadi Eisenkot.
Correct. A former Israeli general who I think is now a minister without portfolio in the far-right cabinet of Netanyahu, who can, amazingly, I believe, is considered by mainstream Western observers to be relatively moderate. He is the author of this doctrine, and it is outright criminality. It just shreds the United Nations Charter, shreds the Geneva Convention, shreds the Genocide Convention. And we're watching it unfold in real time in its most worst iteration to date.
Now, Israel has something like, I don't know, three or four or five brigades or battalions, I think they're brigades, across South Lebanon near the Israeli-Lebanese border. And they've got, you know, ships off the coast. But let's talk about all those divisions or battalions in South Lebanon. And they claim to be, you know, eliminating Hezbollah fighters and munition depots and pushing Hezbollah out. But, you know, today, again, I'm hearing about Hezbollah claiming to be engaged in face-to-face, point-blank range engagement with IDF fighters in Al-Qawsa in South Lebanon. I could just picture it, right? Face-to-face, hand-to-hand. I wonder what that looks like. But they're still fighting. I mean, what's your understanding, Dmitry, of the degree of resistance that Hezbollah is putting up, right? Like, how many weeks after their leadership was supposedly decapitated, after all those pagers went off, blowing up Hezbollah fighters and leaders across the country, eliminating Hezbollah, but they're still engaged in face-to-face combat. Tell me about this and about the missiles and rockets.
So I just want to step back, David, and say something very important about how one, as a non-military expert, I'm not a military expert, tries to form some kind of a reliable judgment about what is happening in a war, particularly one that has such devastating consequences and could have implications for everyone on this planet if it spins out of control. You know, the first thing that I do is I try to identify qualified, independent military experts. Now, what do I mean by independent? I mean that they do not work for any government. They do not work for any think tank or other organization that is funded by military contractors. They do not work for a corporate media outlet, and they are not currently serving in any military. And once I've identified those persons, I try to identify them as many as possible. So I'm not relying unduly on one or two people, but I'm getting a broad variety of opinions from these independent experts. And then I look at, this is very important, what both sides to the war are saying. I don't only listen to the side that's backed by my government. And that's not easy to do because our government and other Western governments have a nasty habit of silencing or depriving us of information coming from our so-called enemies whenever there's a war. They did this in Ukraine. So you have to find ways of accessing what the other side is saying, and you have to listen to that just as carefully as you're listening to the side that favors your government. Okay. And finally, if you can, if you're in my fortunate position and you can actually visit the war zone, particularly the side that is not being covered by your media, the media in the country in which you live, then that will also form a potentially important source of information. So I think it's really important to make this clear. So who do I regard as independent military experts in this particular case? As I define independence, Colonel Douglas McGregor, former colonel in the U.S. Army, Lawrence Wilkerson, former colonel in the U.S. Army, former chief of staff to Colin Powell, Scott Ritter, former U.S. Marines intelligence officer and a former U.N. weapons inspector, Jacques Beau, who is a Swiss intelligence officer and a former NATO officer, Matthew Ho, a former captain in the U.S. Marines. Another one whom I just spoke to, Ray McGovern, former CIA analyst who personally briefed two presidents in his capacity as a CIA analyst. And there are a few others, okay? All of these people, what I'm about to tell you, is an opinion that they all share. Emphatically so. It's not a qualified opinion. The opinion is that Israel is going to get crushed and it is taking a beating. That doesn't mean that Israel has suffered more casualties than its enemies. It hasn't. It has inflicted more civilian and military casualties on its opponents. The problem that Israel confronts is that Israel's appetite for pain is much lower than that of the enemy. The Palestinian people are accustomed to this level of suffering, or close to it. The people in South Lebanon have seen this before. They've been on the receiving end of the Dahiyah Doctrine. The people in Syria have seen this before. The Yemenis have seen this before. The tolerance for pain in Israeli society is not nearly as high as it is in any of these societies, and Israel is fighting them all at once. It's insanity what it is doing. It's taking on everyone at once and is now trying to provoke a full-scale direct war with Iran, which is a much larger country than Israel. It has 90 million people. It has enough missiles to absolutely destroy Israel's key infrastructure and military bases, and it has demonstrated beyond a shadow of a doubt that it can penetrate Israel's air defenses and all of the supplemental air defenses of Jordan, Britain, the United States, and so forth. Again, you don't have to take my word for it. You can listen to all of these independent military experts, and they're going to tell you exactly what I'm telling you.
And it's an amazing thing that Hezbollah has the capacity to put an armed drone, suicide drone, through a window or the roof of the mess hall of the elite Golani Brigade just outside Haifa.
And you know, many people don't know this in the West because it's not covered by the media, but Hezbollah has published 3 to 4 videos. They're about 9 to 10 minutes long, shot by their surveillance drones that penetrate Israeli air defenses without detection, without even being detected, let alone shot down repeatedly. And they have published detailed surveillance footage of all sorts of military and infrastructural assets of Israel in the north of the country. They just demonstrated that they can hit those assets with precision. The one that they just struck, this cafeteria on that military base, is south of Haifa, David. It's not near the border. It's south of Haifa. If they can hit that, they can hit any of the military targets. And they identified in these surveillance videos, I've watched them several times, they identified David Sling's Iron Domes launchers. They identified the barracks of various other divisions of the U.S. Of the Israeli military. They identified hangars of fighter aircraft, drones. They've identified the Rafael manufacturing facilities in Haifa, which is the major military contractor in Israel, the one that is probably producing the most military equipment within Israel. They can hit all of these targets. And that's just Hezbollah. Okay, Iran has a much greater ability to strike Israel than Hezbollah.
But they don't have, I mean, I don't know about Iran, but Hezbollah, they've got all these missiles, like long-range missiles, that are relatively precise, but they're not guided. So it seems to me that, you know, they can fire off 100 or 200, but whether or not they hit the oil refinery in Haifa or the, you know, Mossad headquarters, Unit 8200, you know, direct hit, or, you know, hit a hangar with a dozen F-35s in it, is a matter of, it's kind of like a matter of luck. Right? It's like shooting an arrow at a bullseye and getting it right at the center of the bullseye, as opposed to hitting it right on the edge or just going right past the bullseye.
Most of its missiles are unguided, but it actually has guided missiles. A very significant proportion of its missiles, particularly the longer range missiles with much bigger warheads, are guided. It's not just their drones. So it hasn't used them yet, not in any significant quantities.
The missiles.
The missiles. Yes,
and when is it going to, do you think it's going to?
If this continues, inevitably it will. At some point it will. It hasn't played that card yet. I think what Hezbollah is doing, and this is something that I hear from a number of people in the region, is it actually is trying to avoid a full-scale war. It has been trying very hard. And if it employs those missiles, there will be no prospect for any kind of a resolution. It wants to bring the slaughter in Gaza to an end and avoid the slaughter of its own population. But it's trying to apply pressure on Israel that is sufficient to cause it to stop the genocide in Gaza. And so it's been playing a very, very delicate balancing act between applying pressure, but not going so far that Israel goes berserk. I think at this stage, it's highly doubtful that Israel is going to be restrained at all. So I think we're about to see And they've been doing this. You've been seeing this over the past few days. They've started to bring out some of their more potent missiles. They've started to bring out some of their guided missiles. And they're going to begin to use them with increasing ferocity as long as this continues.
So you've talked, Dmitry Lascaris, about Israel being poised on the edge of or the brink of strategic defeat. I think that's a term you've used. Correct me if I'm wrong. What does strategic defeat look like for Israel?
Well, let's separate the what I mean by strategic defeat from the causes. The causes is a separate question. What I mean by strategic defeat is that the model which has constituted Israel as we know it today, it collapses and it can no longer be sustained.
What do you mean by that? The model collapses.
The model is that Israel is an apartheid state, okay, subjugates the Palestinian population, which is roughly equal in size to that of the Jewish population in Israel, continues to receive approximately $4 billion a year or more in military aid from the United States, and is given complete and utter impunity for its crimes and its relentless violations of international law. That is the Israel that we have known up until now. That Israel is about to disappear, in my view.
How do you see that happening, and like when? Like, I'm wondering whether or not this is the long game. This will happen in 50 years or 100 years, or it'll happen in the next 5 or 10.
Oh, I would say highly likely to happen in the next 5 years. And it's not just the war. It's very important to understand that wars, the outcomes of wars are driven to a large degree by economics. Economics are very important. Israel's economy is getting blasted. And if you don't believe me, again, you don't have to take my word for it. I don't purport to be a world-class economic expert. Listen to Dr. Jeffrey Sachs, one of the most sophisticated. I interviewed him a week ago. He's one of the most sophisticated economists in the Western world. He will tell you that Israel's economy is a train wreck, and it's just getting worse by the day. Its debt has now, it's now been downgraded twice. Its debt is now on the verge of being classified as junk debt, junk bonds. Its port of Eilat has declared bankruptcy. People are fleeing the country. I know this because I can see them all over Greece and Cyprus, David. There are Israelis everywhere in Greece and Cyprus. And people are openly talking about the fact that they're flooding into these into the other countries in the Mediterranean. There are people who have been permanently displaced from northern occupied Palestine, about 100,000 Israelis approximately. And they're not going back. They've said very clearly, if you read the Israeli press, they will not go back unless Hezbollah is disempowered and expelled from South Lebanon, moved to the north of the Litani River, and there is absolutely no hope in hell of that happening. So the economy of northern Israel has just basically been decimated permanently. It can't be revived by military intervention. And then you have people being taken out of the workforce. You have people who are being permanently disabled. Thousands of Israelis who are, you know, productive members of the workforce in normal times have been permanently disabled. And the number is growing rapidly. So when you add all of this up, plus the fact that Israel is now a political pariah, notwithstanding the West's support, it is more isolated than it has ever been. And its military is being rapidly weakened and cannot sustain repeated missile attacks from Iran and its allies in the region. As I see it, this only ends in one way, and that is the collapse of the model that Israel has been, the apartheid state that I described, since the time of its founding.
And I mean, talking about Israel becoming more and more of a pariah state, just the news keeps coming fast and furious. I've just heard that the French government, Emmanuel Macron, has issued a ban. Israel will not be allowed to present its naval military hardware at an upcoming naval conference in Paris in a month's time, Euro-Naval, big conference. The Israelis will be allowed to attend, but they won't be allowed to display their goods. Now, I find that amazing. I find that remarkable. And, you know, whatever you may say about what's going on in Canada with, you know, Melanie Joly and Trudeau, right, who, you know, support genocide, I guess. But there's only so far they'll go to stop genocide. but there's stuff happening, right? They're banning, outlawing certain settler organizations and removing charitable status from Jewish National Fund. And it's happening. It's happening. And wait for the International Criminal Court, for the pretrial chamber, to approve Karim Khan's arrest warrants application against Benjamin Netanyahu and Yoav Gallant. At that point, the Prime Minister of Israel and its defense minister will have international arrest warrants on their heads.
These are all factors that are important. The problem there, David, is if we rely strictly on those developments, you know, Israel will end up literally wiping out the entire population of Gaza. You know, that's too slow. You know, I do think eventually, not these governments, but I think that eventually there will be changes in government for a whole variety of reasons in the major Western backers of Israel, which will see this unqualified, multifaceted support finally be brought to an end. That will happen eventually, but that's going to take too long to save the Palestinian people. And I think that the enemies of Israel in the region understand that. They understand they can't wait. The Palestinian people don't have that much time. That's why you're seeing these military interventions happening, you know, from multiple sources in the region. Israel, and I strongly believe Israel cannot economically, politically, and militarily sustain this war much longer.
And again, getting back to what I was hearing Mads Gilbert, the Norwegian physician, talking about just this evening on Al Jazeera, that 10 Lebanese firemen were killed in the course of a strike on a fire station somewhere in South Lebanon, and like dozens of ambulances have been fired upon, shot up, and it's of course been happening in Gaza. It happens in the West Bank. That Israel, I think, holds the all-time world record. The IDF and Air Force hold the all-time world record for shooting up ambulances.
Yeah, I interviewed the civil defense director for the whole of South Lebanon in May. This is before the massive escalation. At that point in time, the fighting was fairly well contained. And he told me that in South Lebanon alone, at that point, they had lost 19 ambulance drivers and medics in bombings of ambulances by Israel. And he also told me that a number of the ambulances had been attacked with white phosphorus.
And this is amazing because you see this footage on television or images on the internet of these long thread-like, you know, plumes of strange, wiggly, zigzagging smoke coming down to the ground. And this is, not everybody realizes this, but this is white phosphorus. They're dropping white phosphorus. It burns to the bone. Right, ignites wounds. It's the wounds that burn. You can't put them out. And Israel's dropping these on civilian population. It's flagrantly unlawful, but they just do it.
And there's more. I mean, I saw, you know, in Bin Jebel, there was a drone strike in a hospital, the main hospital in Bin Jebel, killing three people who were exiting, including a father and a son who were exiting the emergency ward. And I went there 2 hours afterwards. After they were killed. And I saw the aftermath, spoke to witnesses. They said, there was nothing happening here that could possibly justify a military attack. They're simply trying to, you know, terrorize the population and destroy our healthcare system. And then when I was in Beirut this weekend, I went to the Islamic Medical Center, which was a short distance from the hotel I was staying at, and saw the wreckage, the remains of a medical facility where they killed seven staff members, including two medics. There was an ambulance sitting outside. It was clearly marked as a medical facility. And the Israeli government didn't even give a justification. They didn't even offer a pretext for this attack. So they've gotten to the point, David, where they're destroying the healthcare system in Gaza and Lebanon. And they almost have no desire to even bother giving excuses for what they're doing because nobody's holding them to account. It's like, who cares? I mean, why even bother trying to justify what we're doing? They're going to let us get away with it anyways.
Dimitri, I've been to Lebanon on a couple of occasions. The last time I was there, you know, on an environment and development mission, I went to accompanied some folks from St. Joseph University in eastern Beirut, the university there. They've got a biology lab, accompanied somebody up into the mountains near Jezzine, outside Jezzine, to see some cedar trees, the Lebanese sacred Lebanese cedar that they're